Jayam Vishnupad, Paramahamsa, Parivrajakacharya, Asatara Satashishi Mahārāja, Divine Grace, Esi Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj, Prabhupada Ki Jai. ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Nantakoti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai. Nam Acharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai. Prem Shikaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Go Gopina Shai Mukunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhana Ki Jai. Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai. Mathura Dham Ki Jai. Navadvip Mayapur Dham Ki Jai. Jagannath Puri Dham Ki Jai. Gangamai Jamuna Devi Ki Jai. Bhakti Devi Ki Jai. Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai. Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnupadaya. Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namane. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharane Nirvasesus Nirvani Paskachade Satarane. Mandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha. Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Sam Sajivam Sadvoitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitam Scha Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
August 6th, 2013, Hilo, Hawaii, class over Skype and phone. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 8, Prayers by Queen Kunti and Parikit Saved, Text 3. Tatra.
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 There.
There.
Yeah.
Asinam.
Asinam.
Sitting.
Sitting.
Guru Patim.
Guru Patim.
The king of the Kurus. Dhritarashtram. Dhritarashtra.
Dhritarashtra.
Saha Anujam.
Saha Anujam.
With his younger brothers.
With his younger brothers.
Gantarim.
Gantari.
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 Putra.
Putra.
Son.
Son.
Shoka Artam. Overtaken by bereavement.
Overtaken by bereavement.
Pritam.
Pritam.
Kunti.
Kunti.
Krishnam.
Krishnam.
Draupadi.
Draupadi.
Cha.
Cha.
Also.
Also.
Madhava.
Madhava.
Lord Sri Krishna.
Lord Sri Krishna.
Okay, I hope you can all hear me. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. There sat the king of the Kurus, Maharaj Yudhisthira, along with his younger brothers and Dhritarashtra, Gantari, Kunti, and Draupadi, all overwhelmed with grief. Lord Krishna was also there. Purport. The battle of Kurukshetra was fought between family members, and thus all affected persons were also family members, like Maharaj Yudhisthira and brothers Kunti, Draupadi, Subhadra, Dhritarashtra, Gandhari, and her daughters-in-law, etc. All the principal dead bodies were in some way or other related with each other, and therefore the family grief was combined. Lord Krishna was also one of them, as a cousin of the Pandavas and a nephew of Kunti, as well as brother of Subhadra, etc. The Lord, therefore, was equally sympathetic towards all of them, and therefore he began to pacify them befittingly. Chatrasinam kurupatim, chaturastram sahanujam, gantarim putrashokartam, prittam krishnam chamadava. There sat the king of the Kurus, Maharaj Yudhisthira, along with his younger brothers and Dhritarashtra, Gandhari, Kunti, and Draupadi, all overwhelmed with grief. Lord Krishna was also there. So it's situations like this in the Shastra that may be very bewildering and appear to be contradictory. Because here it says, Shoka Artam, overtaken by bereavement. But Krishna has said, Brahma-bhuta prasannatma na sochati na kanchati sama sarveshu bhuteshu madbhaktim labhate param. That you start to become a devotee of Krishna. You begin your devotional service when you're free from this lamentation. You're free from the shoka. But here we see Kurupatim, the king of the Kurus, Pritam Kunti, Krishnam Draupadi, are all overtaken by bereavement. Are they not also devotees? How can they be overtaken by bereavement? So this is, of course, one of the main questions that people practicing Krishna consciousness have. How am I supposed to feel towards my family members? In particular, I mean towards people in general, but particularly towards family members. And everyone has family members, generally speaking. I mean, everyone's born from a mother and father. Unless your mother died at birth and your father died before your birth, you have some connection with the mother and father. Or you're raised by someone, you're raised then by adoptive parents. You have some family. Most people have brothers and sisters, although if the Chinese had their way, nobody would have brothers and sisters. But most of us have brothers or sisters. We have grandparents, aunts and uncles, cousins, so many relatives and family. And we're attached to our family. We're attached to our nation, to our society. And when some misfortune comes to these people, we lament. We're interested in their fortune, as will be said later on in the chapter, when Kunti asked to sever her tie of affection for her kinsmen. Prabhupada notes that the grihastha may feel obligated to ask the Lord for so many things for their family members. So we rejoice in their celebrations, we lament in their difficulties, and of course we could say, practically speaking, one of the supreme difficulties is death. When the family members die, then we lament. And yet the devotees are told, you cannot lament. Na sochati na kanchati. No hankering, no lamentation. To be equipoised. Krishna says those who are dear to him are not affected by auspicious and inauspicious things. Death, what is more inauspicious than death? And what to speak of this kind of a death where if it was family killing family. And he says those who are dear to me, they don't fame, infamy, auspicious, inauspicious, happiness and distress, that the devotee is not affected. Krishna says so many times in the Bhagavad Gita, the devotee is not affected by happiness and distress. So many times devotees think, well, that must mean that I'm simply callous. Indeed, Srila Prabhupada says that in the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, purport to text 20 to 23, which is, if you read this sentence in the purport, basically, you become astonished. Prabhupada says the devotee should be callous. He uses the word callous towards incidental occurrences, is how he puts it, incidental occurrences. So the English word incidental generally means very small. It's almost synonymous with insignificant. Oh, there was some incident. It means it was something that wasn't very important. If the government wants to play down something, they'll call it an incident. incidental occurrences. And what does he list these? Accidents, disease, scarcity, and even the death of a most dear relative. So these are exactly the kind of things that, to most of us, are not at all incidental. These are calamities. Accidents is a calamity. Disease, a calamity. Scarcity is a calamity. And the death of a most dear relative, again, perhaps the greatest calamity. The Prabhupada says to be callous towards these incidental occurrences. So as Prabhupada's using the word callous, callous means if you do a lot of work with your hands, the skin becomes hardened. Or if you walk barefoot a lot, it's like we know some devotees, you know, I have one friend who, when she was visiting the Dham, she was always walking barefoot. And then her feet would make noise on the floor like shoes because the skin on her feet became so calloused. So calloused means that the skin becomes hardened as a protection. It's like the turtle has a shell, a hard, the turtle has its skeleton outside its body, has its hard shell, its armor, so that nothing can penetrate it. So a callus is like that. A callus is protecting your hands, protecting your feet or wherever from injury, from repeated use. So indeed we may interpret this statement that we should be callous towards incidental occurrences such as accidents, disease, scarcity, and even the death of a most dear relative, that we should have some sort of a hard heart, that we should be uncaring and basically not feel anything. Nisochitina kanchiti. That one would not feel anything. One would have no emotions and no feelings. And then we see in the lives of the devotees, because if you want to know how to understand the scripture, you have to see someone doing it. You have to have a model. Mahajanayena Kataspapanka, as we discussed the other day. You can't just read the scriptures. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu quotes, you can't just read the scriptures. Scriptures, vina, the scriptures will tell you one thing here and one thing over there. You have to have a model. You have to see, what does that mean? To be callous towards incidental occurrences, even the death of a most dear relative. What does that look like? So we look at the great souls. What is their behavior? How do they live on the Brahma-Bhuta platform? And how funny. Shoka Artha. They're overtaken by bereavement. Not only are they bereaving, but they're overtaken by bereavement. Cha Madhava. And Prabhupada says Lord Krishna was also there. And Prabhupada says, not just that Krishna was there as some sort of neutral party, but here Prabhupada says in the purport, Lord Krishna was also one of them. As a cousin of the Pandavas and nephew of Kunti, as well as brother of Subhadra, the Lord therefore was equally sympathetic towards all of them. So Lord Krishna also has sympathy. There's some sympathy, there's care. So again, what do we do? Does it mean that if we're a devotee, that we have no caring? That our heart is hard? That nothing ever affects us? What is the mystery of this situation? And if things affect us, then how are we different from an ordinary materialist? What is the point then of being a devotee? If being a devotee means I'll also be overwhelmed with grief and sympathy, why be a devotee? Why go through all the austerity of giving up sense gratification and giving up material enjoyment if then I'm just going to also shoka artha? It's a great mystery. But here we see that although lamentation is the sign of a shudra, Prabhupada says that one of the symptoms of a shudra is that they lament. An ignorant person laments. But karuna ras is a sign of a sadhu. And here we see the devotees absorbed in Karuna Ras. Of course, Dhritarashtra and Gandhari may be absorbed in lamentation. I don't know. But at least Kunti, Draupadi, Maharaj Yudhisthira, their experience is of Karuna Ras, not lamentation. Lamentation is a sign of a Shudra, and Karuna Ras is the sign of a Sadhu. So let's look at the difference between this, between lamentation and Karuna Ras. So lamentation is the other side of attachment, nasochitina kanchati. I want something and I lament. Want something. So everybody who's materially attached wants something. Why? Because they feel insufficient. They feel insufficient. The conditioned soul, being in the illusion of separation from the Supreme, imagines that they are incomplete, that they do not have what they need. They are not feeling atmarama and aptakama, self-satisfied in the self and able to fulfill all of their own desires. Rather, the conditioned soul understands that I am dependent on others and I am dependent on my circumstances in order to fulfill my desires, in order to get what I need to fulfill my desires, in order to get what I need even to live. The conditioned soul is thinking I'm dependent on the sun, the air, and food, and water, and shelter in order to live. That, of course, is an illusion. Ajayate miyate vakadachin nayam bhutva bhavitava nabuyaha ajo nityasasvatoyam prano nahanyate hanyamane sharire. The soul is always alive. Never was it there a time when you and I and all these kings did not exist, and never will there be a time when we do not exist. But the conditioned soul believes I am this body, and my existence is dependent on bodily maintenance, which is dependent on so many factors external to the body. The body cannot maintain itself by itself. The body is not a perpetual motion machine. Just like I have this little MP3 player, and it has my alarm clock on it. So this morning my alarm clock didn't ring, and when I woke up I saw the battery was dangerously low, it says. I had to plug it in. It can't give its own power. It has to get its power from somewhere. Even I have a watch that doesn't have a battery, doesn't need a battery replaced, but it gets its power from the sun. The face of it is a solar battery. It has to get its power from something outside of itself. So the conditioned soul therefore becomes very attached to the things which it believes that it needs for its fulfillment of desires. If you think you need something, you'll be attached to the source of the things that you need. If you think without air, without water, without food, without shelter, I will die, you're going to be attached to air, food, water, and shelter. And if those things are removed, you will lament. Oh, how will I live? How will I live? What will happen to me? I will suffer. And this is true with things, and it's also true with relationships, because we don't just have physiological needs, we have psychological needs, we have emotional needs, we have social needs. Bhaktivinoda Thakura lists 4 categories of needs. And so if something happens to our family members, we think, who will love me? When I was a teenager, there was this song, "Don't you want somebody to love? Don't you need somebody to love?" And Prabhupada was told about that. He said, yes, we all need somebody to love. This is the truth. So our family members, particularly for most people, represent who I love the most and who loves me the most. And if my family members die, who will I love? Who will love me? Where will I get my emotional satisfaction from? Therefore, if there is some calamity to them, we lament. Because all of these things which are meant to fulfill our attachments, are meant to fulfill our needs, all these things we're attached to, they're all shaky. They're all fallible soldiers. So we are basically always in some state of lamentation. Either we're lamenting that we didn't get them, we didn't get the job, we didn't get the girlfriend, we didn't get the car, we didn't get the this, or we got it and we don't really like it. We married the girl of our dreams and turns out she's the girl of our nightmares. Or she was the girl of our dreams and now she's gotten an accident, as Prabhupada said, or she's diseased, or she's dying, or she's dead. So we are lamenting. Oh, why didn't I get that? I worked so hard for it. I tried so hard. One friend of mine wanted to enroll her homeschool children in a correspondence school, and she worked on it for weeks and weeks and weeks. And then finally they said, to be enrolled in our correspondence school, your children have to get a physical from a doctor. And when she went to the doctors, they said, if your child hasn't been vaccinated, we won't give them a physical. And she didn't want to vaccinate them, so she couldn't get her child a physical, so she couldn't enroll them in the school after weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks of work. So we work for something, we try for something, and then it doesn't happen. Or it happens, you know, we get the car, we get the this, we get the that, and we don't like it. It says something wrong with it, or it's not what we thought it would be. I thought it would be like this. This is how it was advertised, and I get it, and it's something different. Or it's something perfect, we really love it. And then it breaks, it dies. So therefore we are lamenting. And if you analyze this sochachi kanchachi, this lamentation, it's all self-based. I was just thinking about that this morning. So there's some family members of mine with whom I have certainly a friendly relationship, and I see them from time to time. I certainly like them and I care about them. And they're going through some difficulty in their lives, having some financial difficulty, some relationship difficulty. But I was realizing this morning that I don't have practically any anxiety about it. I don't have any lamentation about it. Why is that? Because their difficulty doesn't touch me at all. Whether they have enough money or they don't have enough money, it has no effect on my personal life whatsoever. And therefore my degree of lamentation for it is very small. Now you may say, well, sometimes we do lament for people with whom we have no relationship, but that's only if somehow we feel that we have a relationship. Just like if you read in the news 20,000 people are killed in an earthquake, you don't generally feel lamentation. But if the reporter writes about one of those people and really brings you into their life, and then you start to feel, oh, I'm connected with this person, then you will lament. All the lamentation is due to attachment. If you're driving down the road and you see a car accident and somebody's lying in the ambulance and you don't know the person, you feel some curiosity, but you don't feel deep grief. You're not overtaken by grief. So if we analyze, we will see that all of our lamentation is due to personal attachment, and all of our personal attachment is due to selfishness. I need for me. I'm not getting what I need. So it is this kind of lamentation, which is a sign not only of a materialist, but Prabhupada says of a Shudra, someone in the mode of ignorance, someone who has no understanding of truth, that my getting what I need is not dependent on this or that situation, my manipulating this situation, when I'm getting, whether or not I feel that I'm getting what I need, is dependent on how close I am to my realization of the truth. If I'm in the mode of ignorance, I'll always be feeling that I'm not getting what I need, always be angry and depressed and lethargic. If I'm in the mode of passion, I'll sometimes feel that I get what I need and sometimes not. And if I'm in the mode of goodness, I'll most of the time be feeling, yes, I'm getting what I need. Not because my situation is different, but because my consciousness is different. So one who's lamenting, I got it and I don't like it, or I got it, I liked it, and I've lost it, they're very much in the mode of ignorance. And it's very self-centered. Therefore, Prabhupada talks about personal and extended sense gratification. One is thinking about my own suffering. Karuna Ras is just the opposite, and this, of course, was explained very nicely in the previous chapter with regard to Draupadi's feeling toward Asvatthama and Asvatthama's mother. Karuna Ras is one, it feels sad for others' suffering, not for one's own, because for one's own sake, one has everything. And Karuna Ras is the sweet and joyous, ecstatic reality of which lamentation is the miserable, perverted reflection. In Karuna Ras, one is feeling very happy. In Karuna Ras, one is themselves, right? Nasochachina kansati, samasarveshu bhuteshu, samasarveshu bhuteshu. One sees everyone equally. Brahmabhuta prasanatma, prasanatma. Atma means self, prasanatma. The self is full of joy. So at the Brahmabhuta stage, prasanatma, the self is full of joy, and joy in the self. Atma ruchi, atma rama, anta shanta. One is feeling satisfaction in the self. I don't need anyone outside myself to bring me satisfaction because myself is full of satisfaction. Why is myself full of satisfaction? Because I see that myself is part of the super self, is part of the Lord, who is expansive, unlimited joy. And I want to share that satisfaction with others. And when I see that others are blocked in some way, if I'm experiencing that, I feel sad for them. Sometimes we have some experience of this, even on a material level, where my pleasure is others' pleasure and I feel pain at others' pain. If we experience something, that's wonderful. The other day I was listening to a recording of one devotee reading Bhaktivinoda Thakur's prayers of Sharanagati. And as I heard some of them, I thought, oh, this is so wonderful. Such and such devotee friend of mine would really like this. So I went to, it took 8 of the prayers, and I got them on my computer, and I spent about an hour formatting them and printing them out. I want to share something nice with somebody else. And I haven't given it to the person yet, but if you give it to the person and they say, no, I don't want this, then you may feel some sadness. Well, why aren't they enjoying this? When we go and distribute Srila Prabhupada's books, when people say, oh, no, I don't want it. Well, I don't need this. And we feel some compassion for them. This foolish person, I don't have time. Right? I don't have any interest. And we have some compassion. Again, this is true even with something material. If you have some good food and you want to share it with people, no, I don't like that, they say. I don't want any. And then you may feel sorry that the person's not joining in the happiness, right? You have a big party going on and somebody's just sulking in their room and they're not participating. And you feel some sorrow, some compassion. But it's interesting that that kind of compassion, if it's on the spiritual level, is a very joyful feeling. It's a feeling of love for the other person, for their sake. Not that you need the other person's participation or whatever in order to feel validated or full yourself, but you simply want the other person to enjoy for the sake of the other person. So this Karuna Ras is very sweet. It's one of the 7 secondary rasas, where one has compassion for the living entities. And this is not just spiritual compassion. Prabhupada felt compassion when he saw that a hungry person near our Mayapur temple was going through the rubbish looking for something to eat. And one devotee looked at Prabhupada and said, sometimes I cry when I see this. And Prabhupada said, sometimes? Why sometimes? So the devotee is an ocean of mercy, Karuna Sindhu. Call the devotee an ocean of mercy. The devotee is feeling overwhelming compassion. Even on the material level, people that don't have food, they don't have clothing, they don't have proper education. Prabhupada would express compassion that people didn't have proper marriages. He said people don't have proper facility for their sex life. They're not able to get married. A man can't afford to maintain a wife. Therefore, he's not marrying until he has... Prabhupada talked about how he himself got married as a third-year student when he had no income. He said, but nowadays, people are saying, how will I marry without already a job and a house? He said, we never thought like that. If we had an education, we knew we would have an income. He said, people in the Kali Yuga, they don't even have facility for their eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. And the devotee feels compassion on that level also. What to speak of that the devotee is full of compassion for those who are not enlightened, for those who are in darkness. When I was a teenager, I read a book about one of the persons in America who led the movement to free the black slaves. And this particular person was jailed. He was also black. He was jailed for his activities. And while in jail, he was thinking that some of these slaves, they don't know any other life, and they may even say they're happy in their life. So if they're not asking to be freed, why should I free them? And then he saw in the prison cell, he just had a bucket for a toilet and there were flies on the stool. And he said, these flies, they think this is a nice life, but I know it's not a nice life. And he said, in the same way, even if people are thinking, I'm very happy, just like Indra was cursed to become a pig. And when Lord Brahma tried to get him to return to heaven, he said, no, I'm very happy here as a pig with my pig mate and my piglets. So the devotee has compassion even upon people who say, yes, I'm all right. Karuna Ras can also be compassion for Krishna. One of the ways in which we exhibit the Sakya of the nine processes of devotion, this is not Sakya Ras, is in preaching, and we preach out of compassion for Krishna, that Krishna wants to reclaim the fallen conditioned souls. And therefore, out of sympathy for Krishna, we are engaged in preaching. So what is this Karuna Ras? What are the emotions connected with it? Well, they're emotions, a feeling of mercy, a feeling of kindness, a feeling of compassion. And we could say sadness and grief. We should not, it's interesting, we think that happy and sad are opposites. That is our concept of duality, this world of duality. If you're sad, you cannot be happy. Of course, as I've given the example so many times, many people do get pleasure even in this world from sadness. Otherwise, there wouldn't be movies that make you cry. There's movies that make you cry. And even sometimes the ending is tragic. And people enjoy such movies. They spend money and go to such movies, you know. Was it a good movie? Oh, it was a great movie. I cried. So it's not a fact that happiness and sadness are opposites. Sadness is, as part of Karuna Ras, is a type of enjoyment. But materially, both happiness and sadness are misery. But spiritually, sadness and grief can be kind of ecstasy. We talk a lot about Viparlumba, the separation between Radha and Krishna, the separation between Mother Yasoda. When Krishna doesn't come back from Mathura, Mother Yasoda is crying so much that she can't even speak. When Uddhava comes with the message for the residents of Vrindavan, and he stays about 3 months in Vrindavan, he goes to talk to Nanda Maharaj and Mother Yasoda. And Nanda Maharaj says, you know, we don't feel better if we leave our home. You know, here in our home, there's so many reminders of Krishna. But when we leave our home, when we also see all of the pastime places of the Lord, And as soon as we see these places, we remember, oh, in this place Krishna did this, in this place Krishna did this. And therefore we are overwhelmed, whether we are at home or out of the home. You know, usually if someone's grieving, you say, why don't you get out of the home? And get out of your house, do something fun. Nanumar said, out of our house, in our house, doesn't matter. And Mother Yasoda couldn't even say anything. She couldn't even speak. She was just crying and crying and crying and crying and crying. And Uddhava's trying to pacify them with philosophy. And they're just crying and crying and crying. So this is Vipralamba. And this is, the Acharya has described that the ecstasy of Vipralamba is higher than that of Sambhog. It's higher than that of being with Krishna. In fact, when Gopa Kumar in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, when he's in Goloka Vrindavan and Krishna goes to Mathura, he says, we stay in Vrindavan. He said, we would rather stay in Vrindavan without Krishna than go to Mathura with Krishna. And he said, the happiness of separation from Krishna dances on the heads of all other happiness. And Gopa Kumar is saying this after having gone to every planet in the material world, and the Vaikuntha planets, and Ayodhya in the spiritual sky, everything, Brahma Jyoti, each happier than the other, happier than the other, happier than the other, happier than the other. Finally, he finds the supreme happiness in Goloka Vrindavan, but then he says separation from Krishna dances on the heads of all the other happiness. Radharani says, when I'm with Krishna, I see one Krishna. When I'm away from Krishna, I see unlimited Krishnas. So that is a great sadness. It's a grief. They're crying and crying and crying. When Krishna's in the coils of Kaliya, the gopis are crying so much on their way to the Yamuna that their tears are making the ground wet. Have any of us ever cried that much? I mean, I've cried enough so that my clothes got at least somewhat wet, but not soaking. I said, never cried enough so that the ground got wet. I don't know if I've ever cried enough so that the ground even got a few drops on it. And the gopis were crying so much the ground got wet. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was crying so much in the Rath Yatra that his tears were shooting out like they had been put out by syringes. But this is ecstasy. This is great happiness. This kind of grief, this kind of sadness is great happiness. So at least in this verse, Krishna and pure devotees like Maharaj Yudhisthira, Kunti, and Draupadi, they're experiencing this Karuna Ras. I'm not sure what Dhritarashtra and Gandhari are experiencing. But at least those who are saintly persons, they're not experiencing ordinary grief. They do not have the lamentation of a sudra. They have the Karuna Ras, which is the sign of a sadhu. Lamentation is the sign of the shudra, and karuna ras is the sign of a sadhu. So for those of us who are practicing some form and level of sadhana bhakti, whether we are in advanced stages of raganuga sadhana, beginning raganuga sadhana, advanced vaidhi sadhana, beginning vaidhi sadhana, wherever we are in the platform of sadhana bhakti, the way that we give up lamentation is to develop the emotions of bhakti. When Prabhupada talks about being callous, he doesn't talk about being callous in terms of being hard-hearted. He can't be. Because throughout the scriptures, throughout the works of the Acharyas, hard-heartedness is condemned. Hard-heartedness is said to be the result of impersonalism, which Dehavadbhiravapite. We're not recommended to take up Klesho Dikataraste-sham Avyakta Sakta-tetasam Avyakta Higatir-dukam Dehavadbhiravapite. That path is not recommended. The path of becoming materially hard-hearted and then trying to develop bhakti, that's not recommended. We are trying to become very soft-hearted. So our process is we replace the material attachment to me, to spiritual attachment to Krishna. After all, Krishna is the self of the self. So this same attachment to myself I then have to the super self, That includes myself. And I replace this lamentation. Oh, I need this, I can't get this, this will happen, that will happen, this did happen. To compassion and karuna, compassion for the living entities. And as Prabhupada says, gradually and proportionally, as we develop our attachment to Krishna, our material attachment decreases. If you just try to decrease the material attachment, Krishna says it's a hard path and doesn't work very well. So we should ask ourselves, how much does my heart break for others' suffering? And how much am I lamenting for my own suffering? To whatever degree I'm lamenting for my own suffering, I am a Shudra. And to whatever extent my heart breaks for others' suffering in a way that is bringing me joy, to that extent I am a sadhu. Prabhupada says one should test oneself. One doesn't need a certificate from others. One should be able to see how much I'm becoming attached to Krishna and how much I'm becoming detached from illusion. Attachment to Krishna means that one is flooded with an ocean of spiritual emotions. So here in Krishna's Leela, we see that Krishna and his devotees also have these feelings. They are not without feelings. They are persons. But their feelings are all ecstatic, and their feelings are not selfish, because they are already fully satisfied. Krishna is fully satisfied. Draupadi, Kunti, Yudhisthira, they are already Atmarama and Aptakama. But rather, they are experiencing these feelings because they are persons. And persons means feelings, it means desires, it means emotions, it means relationships. But they are on the platform of actual love and actual freedom. So, questions, comments?
Hare Krishna, Mother Urmila. My question is that, can anyone hear me?
I can hear you.
I hear you.
Okay. Now, when a Vaishnava or Vaishnavi departs, it's not like I feel ecstatic or anything. We can feel lots of sadness, missing their association. So, is this the same thing as what you're speaking about, or is this? We could feel happiness if also, like, oh, great joy, this devotee went back home, back to Godhead. But a lot of times, I know, at least for myself, I'm feeling a great sadness and lamentation that they're no longer here for us, for their have their association. So I was wondering if you could elaborate on that.
It depends. As Prabhupada says, gradual and proportional. So there's proportions. It can be purely material lamentation. It can be purely spiritual karuna, and it can be something that's mixed. That depends on the individual. But karuna ras is ecstatic. It's intense grief and it's intense sadness, but it's very satisfying and expands the ocean of joy of bhakti that's in the heart of the devotee. Even though they may be externally crying torrents of tears, and the flavor of that joy is in grieving. The flavor of that joy is in grieving. Just like a sad movie. There's pleasure in sad movies, or people wouldn't see them. They wouldn't make them. But it has a particular flavor. It has a particular flavor. Or just like eating. I like bitter melon. Some people don't like it, but I like bitter melon. It's pleasure. But it has its particular flavor. It's not that we only like sweets. Even Krishna doesn't only like sweets. I mean, he especially likes sweets, for sure. But he doesn't only like sweets. And some people really enjoy spicy food. I don't at all, but I know one Indian lady who lives in Croatia, and she can't eat the temple prasadam because there's no chilies in it. If it's no chili, she can't enjoy it. So chilies are painful. They hurt. But yet there's pleasure. So how do you know? How do you know what you're feeling? Well, first of all, what's it about? Is it about you? Or is it about them? Is it about you? Is it about the world? What's it about? Who's the center? And what's the result? Is the result that you're just depressed and lethargic and you've lost your spiritual vision? Or is the result that you're enlivened with spiritual vision? Does your attachment to Krishna decrease, or does your attachment to Krishna increase? So it's really not that complicated. I mean, sometimes we think bhakti is so complicated. It's not very complicated. Prabhupada says it's simple for the simple. If it's spiritual, your attachment for Krishna's name, fame, form, qualities, and pastimes will increase. If it's material, your attachment for Krishna's name, fame, qualities, and pastimes will decrease. If it's material, then you lose your intelligence, you lose your vision. If it's spiritual, you increase in your intelligence and your vision. Prabhupada says you can judge yourself. And you know when food is nourishing and makes you feel healthy and energized, and you know when food makes you feel lethargic and dull. So when you eat food of different flavors, you feel energized. You can feel just as energized by eating something spicy and eating something bitter as you can by eating something sweet. So you have to be able to gauge yourself by your own symptoms. Mode of goodness is all the gates of the body are illumined by knowledge. So it's not just some intellectual thing. Well, let's see, am I crying? Because no, it's an experience. What is your experience? Do you feel more enlivened in devotional service, or do you feel less enlivened in devotional service? Or to what degree? I hope that's helpful. Any others?
Hare Krishna, Mother Irma.
Hare Krishna.
Please accept my humble obeisances. I kind of hooked up late, but what I heard was very nice and very kind and sweet what you were saying. And I was just wondering, can you consider wanting material things? Is that kind of considered like disease?
Well, wanting material things, I mean, we do have a body to maintain, and we're not being asked, like those practicing Jada yoga, to walk around naked, and whatever food just falls in front of us, we accept that. That is a kind of yoga. It's mentioned in the Bhagavatam. It's performed even by God, by Lord Rishabhdev. It's performed, in fact, by Yudhisthira at the end of his life. So it's not that that's not a form of yoga. It is, indeed. But that's not the particular form of yoga that we're being told to perform by Srila Prabhupada, or by Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, or Bhaktivinoda Thakur, or even by Rupa Goswami, and even by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu traveled as a sannyasi in South India, he had four sets of clothes, I assume wearing one and carrying three. His servant was carrying three. And he would beg for food from door to door. So he wasn't performing that kind of yoga. When he was in Puri, he had a room, the Gambira, where he would stay. And in his travels, he would generally stay at the house of a Brahmana, and he would take his meals at the house of a Brahmana and so forth. Perhaps sometimes they stayed outside if they weren't anywhere near a village. So it depends. If you're thinking, I have to have material things, otherwise I will not be happy and satisfied, and otherwise I cannot live, then that is a kind of disease. If you're thinking, I need some material things in order to do the service that Krishna's given me in this world, but whether they come or not, that's the will of the Lord. So it's my service. You know, it's my service. So if I have a service, like I've been asked to give these classes, so to give these classes, I need a computer. I know, I need some way to hook up. I need a microphone. There's certain material things that I need in order to do the service I was asked to do. But if Krishna takes away all these things, then okay, maybe he wants me to do a different service. You know, Srila Prabhupada translated and commented on the whole Bhagavad Gita, then his manuscript was stolen, which is amazing. And later on, his typewriter was stolen, and Prabhupada just started again. But whatever. If Krishna gives, you know, like it says in the Bible, the Lord gives and the Lord takes away. Blessed be the holy name of the Lord. So, but there's a very big difference in consciousness. The devotee does not feel dependent on material things, even material things used for service, for their sense of happiness. The devotee's sense of happiness is coming from their connection with Krishna. Whereas the materialist feels that the material things are necessary for me to feel happy and satisfied. And if I don't have material things just so in this way, then I won't feel happy and satisfied. But that's just not true. It just isn't true. It isn't a fact. Our happiness and satisfaction is coming from within. So, you know, is wanting material things a disease? It depends. Why do you want them? What's driving you? What's your inner motive? Prabhupada wanted us to build buildings. I mean, they're material things. He wanted us to build temples. It's bricks, concrete, and so forth. But Prabhupada's understanding was that if we didn't have any kind of building, people wouldn't come. I see this in Chennai. So in Chennai, in South India, Madras, we used to have there a very, very small temple. It was really just a regular building where one room was used as a temple room. And the temple was very far from the city center. It's right by the ocean, out in the country, kind of suburb, at least 20-minute drive from the main center of the city. And frankly speaking, nobody was coming. And then the devotees built an article about it in a recent Back to Godhead. The devotees built this beautiful temple, and very unusual temple. The structure of the temple represents the structure of the universe. As you walk up the stairs, there's inlaid marble for the various chakras of the universal body. And at the top of the stairs in the middle of the temple room, there's the symbol of the Sahasra Chakra at the top of the head. The windows have translucent paintings of the Dikpalas, the various incarnations of the Lord that control the directions and their yantras, the chandeliers constantly revolving with different colors sparkling off of it. I mean, it's an amazing place. And well, now there's thousands and tens of thousands and sometimes hundreds of thousands of people coming to the temple and people engaging in kirtan. Whereas before, when there was one little room, maybe 100 people. Now you can get 10,000 people. So the building is a material thing. It's a bunch of rocks. Marble, you know, it's concrete and rocks. But you know, whatever Krishna wants, if Krishna sends a cyclone and knocks it down, just like in Christchurch, New Zealand, they had an earthquake, the whole temple was destroyed. But we're not dependent on that for our relationship with Krishna and our happiness. The disease is thinking, I need something outside myself in order to feel satisfied. That is a disease. Okay, we could take one more.
Hare Krishna. Anybody else has a question or comment?
I
Dandavat Sarmalatiti, Spitogdamadavadas.
Hare Krishna.
So, very nice class. Very interesting. I've always been interested in this topic, and I think you really did a good job on it. The famous verse early on in the Gita is, the wise lament neither for the living nor the dead.
So
it always struck me, you know, and this word callous, I was thinking perhaps a better word, because the definition I see online, if you Google it, is showing or having an insensitive or cruel disregard for others. And then the synonyms are unfeeling, insensitive, heartless, hard. So, and you covered that. We're not supposed to be hard-hearted. But I thought perhaps a better word would have been indifferent. And, but, you know, I saw the purport that you referenced in the sixth chapter.
Yes.
And there's a bit of a context to that. And it's about not being overwhelmed by things that happen, accidents, disease, scarcity, you know. We continue with our duties in Krishna consciousness. And we endure all these things because that's where we're in the material world, so we're not getting overwhelmed by these things. So in that way, Prabhupada using the word callous. But it's very interesting how, like, the Dalai Lama will speak about compassion. But compassion for what? Compassion for these bodies? Because he'll admit that they don't believe in a god or a soul. So the Vaishnavas, they're different. Their compassion is for the conditioned souls, and they have a desire to remove their ignorance. But it's very interesting because we are in a verse that the Pandavas, of course, they're going to be having feelings for their children, their relatives. You know, it's a big loss for them. Their lives have changed, right? But as you mentioned, but very interesting topic. Very interesting. And I'd never heard of Karuna Ras before. Where'd that come from?
It's one of the seven secondary rasas.
Uh-huh. And that's sympathy towards others.
It's sympathy, and it can also be grief and sadness.
Right. Bringing up that when we're talking about Vaishnavas and gurus, we observe so many disappearance days. And Narottam ends one song that he's...
I'm breaking my head against the stones.
Right. Chandra, that Narottam is feeling a separation from.
Hmm?
I was asked once, some devotee was here visiting, and he said, "Who is this Ramachandra?" He was asking me as if I might have, in my readings, discovered who this personality was that Narottam was feeling separation from. And the best I could come up with was, just think of the most amazing, you know, beautiful person you've ever known in your life. Multiply that by 1,000, and maybe you're getting close. But anyway, not lamenting for the living or the dead. Actually, everybody gets their karma. I mean, it's all fair in the ultimate consideration. Everyone gets the results of their activities here. And there's justice, universal justice, ultimate justice. So, anyway, a few thoughts.
As always, you have wonderful things to contribute. And a couple things came to my mind. First of all, this feeling of Narottam for his good friend Ramachandra reminded me of where Lord Chaitanya asked Ramananda Roy, what is the greatest unhappiness? And Ramananda Roy said, apart from separation from the devotees, I know of no greater unhappiness. Also, what you said about being overwhelmed with lamentation, that not being overwhelmed, being able to go on with your duty. But here it is said, shoka artam, they're overtaken by bereavement. And in fact, what's going to be happening in this chapter and the next chapter is Krishna is going to make an attempt in the next verses to pacify these relatives. But at least in the case of Maharaj Yudhisthira, it's not going to work. Maharaj Yudhisthira is not going to be pacified by Krishna, and he is going to be overwhelmed by lamentation, so much so that he will not be willing to go on with his duties and his service, that he does become bewildered. And nobody, Vyasadeva Krishna, no one is able to get him back on the right path until they go to see Grandfather Bhishma. So in the next chapter, we have the passing away of Bhishma and how Bhishma is able to speak to Yudhisthira in such a way that Yudhisthira again comes to the path of knowledge. And Srila Prabhupada will comment there. I mean, I don't like to go to take the things from going ahead, but Prabhupada will comment there that Krishna wanted Bhishma rather than himself to be speaking. Krishna wanted to glorify his devotees. Therefore, Krishna in the heart arranged that Maharaj Yudhisthira would not feel pacified until he heard from Bhishma. So we also have this as Leela, which is again operating on at least two levels, where in the one hand it's an instruction for conditioned souls who are still lamenting and who do still get bewildered and who do still say, well, I'm just not going to do my service anymore, and heck with everything, you know, God took away my son, or God did this, God did that, and why should I do anything? Everything's useless. And that such person should then go to a saintly person to become pacified and to become situated again on the right road. And at the same time, of course, this is divine Leela, and Maharaj Yudhisthira is not actually under the mode of ignorance at all, but he's experiencing a transcendental, blissful dealing with Krishna and with Bhishma. So thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.